محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
This spotlight. Doing a song from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The spotlight.
Welcome to the spotlight. The cost of energy for British consumers will rise by 80% from October. That's according to electricity and gas regulator Ofgem. This is indeed a dramatic worsening of the cost of living crisis in a country that is awaiting a new leader. And now stark warnings have been issued of a catastrophe and serious physical and financial damage to British families in the winter. Other major European economies are also witnessing similar economic woes, with German and French electricity prices hitting new records. In this edition of Spotlight, we'll try to explore the reasons behind the deepening energy crisis in Europe and its repercussions. Joining us on the program tonight, we have Gilbert Doctorow, Independent International Affairs Analyst, joining us from Brussels. And we also have Senior Research Fellow at Global Policy Institute at London Metropolitan University, George Samueli, joining us from Budapest.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Doctorow in Brussels. The UK government has announced an 80% rise in electricity and gas bills amid a cost of living crisis. Electricity and gas regulator Ofgem, as we mentioned in our intro, says it will increase its main cap on consumer energy bills to $4,200 per year from the current $2,300. It just continues to get worse for the UK. What do you see as the underlying reasons and causes for the UK's economic troubles?
No, they're self-caused. I think the British took pride in probably being the most green economy in Europe. That is to say, they put great reliance on renewables, on wind power, which in the past year has proved to be a very poor investment because the winds were not favorable and power generated was much less than expected. And they have put nearly all of their electricity into gas, which is green in a way. Unfortunately, they didn't anticipate the shortage of gas on the world market because of the sanctions that they and European powers have imposed on Russia and Russia's response. The Europeans said, we won't take gas, we're going to cut back our reliance on Russian gas, and the Russians said, all right, then we can start cutting back right now. And they have done so, seriously reducing the amount of gas that's flowing into Europe. Now, the cost to the consumer that you mentioned at the outset is real. And in the case of Britain, they are adjusting their price cap every 3 months. The latest projections go out to the end of the year, the start of the new year. However, it has to be said that the British government also has announced plans, this is Johnson has announced plans, to provide subsidies directly to consumers, depending on their wage categories and special circumstances, such as a health condition and the rest. In the case of Europe, the same tenfold increase over last year in the price of electricity is announced in the French newspapers today. So the situation is generalized because the shortage of gas is generalized for the reasons I outlined at the beginning.
George Samueli, in Budapest, anti-poverty campaigners are warning of a catastrophe and serious physical and financial damage to British families. Britons are also grappling with soaring food prices and an inflation that's now at a 40-year high of over 10%. The Resolution Foundation has urged radical measures to prevent a catastrophe this winter. What are these radical measures, in your opinion?
Well, I think as Mr. Dr. Rowe has pointed out, I mean, there are obviously price caps and subsidies of the kind that they practiced during the COVID era. And there's no question. I mean, the outlook for small businesses in the UK is indeed quite shocking. I read a story today that British pubs are claiming that some 70% of them are not going to survive this winter. Many small businesses do not expect to survive this winter. So it is an absolutely catastrophic increases in energy. And of course, that's hitting all households way beyond anything that is affordable by most people. So that's just in the UK. But in Europe, again, it's an absolutely appalling mess. And, you know, the political leaders have so far responded with the notion that, well, we have to make these sacrifices. And then if you ask, well, sacrifices for what? Then they say, well, the sacrifices for Ukraine. But of course, they don't really explain why should ordinary people have to make these sacrifices for Ukraine. They never really made any decision at any time that imposing sanctions against Russia was the way to go. This was decided by unelected elites, and ordinary people in the UK and in Europe are paying the price.
Mr. Doctorow, British people believe the worst is yet to come. And the impact of the increase in consumer energy bills will hit them the hardest in the winter. NHS Confederation says that many Britons this winter could face, quote, the awful choice between eating and heating. How worried should an average British citizen be right now with this outlook?
Well, I think he should focus his mind not on what handouts the British government may or may not give to him and his family, but to focus his mind on what political action he should take in the streets and in his labor unions to look after his own interests and to counter politically a suicidal policy by his government with respect to energy and energy imports from Russia. I think we will see the various European countries reacting very differently in terms of the social protests that will arise, just as the various governments are going to go in very different directions, despite all the talk coming from the European Commission about solidarity. We've had seen in the last week what solidarity means in gas procurement, in the competition for Algerian gas between the Italians and the French, with Mr. Macron being in Algeria this week, not just to celebrate or to renew their long-term cooperation, but the hope that they would provide more gas, especially to France. The result was he missed the boat. The boat has already sailed to Italy. So there will be a lot of competition between the European governments, and there will be various reactions among their populations according to the political activity and labor strength in each country.
George Samueli, throughout all of the difficulties that Britons are facing, labor is criticizing the Tories, saying all of this is a result of 12 years of their government. How much do you see the Tory leadership being responsible, and did they fail to prepare for this day, in your opinion?
Well, yes, but I think that that's true of all of the Europeans. They had, for years and years, they had neglected investing in fossil fuels. They thought, hey, this is passé, you know, we're going to move on into renewables. They had absolutely bungled their relations on regard to energy with Russia. Instead of securing long-term contracts, which the Russians preferred, they wanted to bet everything on the spot market. They thought they could make better deals on purchasing gas on the spot market. It turned out they made an absolutely disastrous decision, and so they're paying far more for the gas. This is even before February the 24th. They're paying far more for the gas than they would have done had they signed long-term contracts with Russia. And then, of course, they compounded it all with all manner of decisions on sanctions. I mean, the coal, they've already banned all coal imports from Russia. They now intend to ban all oil imports from Russia by the end of the year. The Nord Stream 2, this gas pipeline that they spent years building, then Chancellor Olaf Scholz announced, again, before February the 24th and the start of the special military operation, Chancellor Olaf Scholz said, "Now that's it, we're closing down Nord Stream 2. So Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which could have provided gas for Europe, and has been shut down. And of course, now everything is dependent on Nord Stream 1, and now even that is problematic because of all the issues with the compressors, routine maintenance, and of course now gas imports are down very substantially from what they were before. And the Europeans really have very little resort. I mean, they can talk about, oh, well, we're going to move towards liquefied natural gas, but that's a big investment. That's going to take a long time for Europe to be able to switch to liquefied natural gas. So it's a series of decisions that they made, and including, I should also say, that during the time of the COVID shutdowns, they didn't replenish their natural gas stock, so that when the economy started recovering from the COVID, then there wasn't enough gas to fuel things. So it's a series of decisions, and that's why we are where we are.
Mr. Doctorow, the head of the electricity and gas regulator, Ofgem, has urged the next British Prime Minister, who will be elected next month, to take decisive action in accordance with what he called the upcoming fuel crisis. Now, we know that whoever wins the race for Prime Minister in September will have a whole lot to deal with. The outgoing Prime Minister Boris Johnson is insisting that major fiscal decisions would be left to his successor. When a new prime minister comes, will there be enough time to try to deal with this looming fuel crisis? And let's not forget the looming recession.
Well, we've focused on the consumer impact as expressed in the cost of electricity and gas warehouses, or housing is being heated by gas in Britain, which is the dominant situation. We have not spoken about the impact on industry generally. The same newspapers that were reporting today in Britain on the caps being put on electricity prices were reporting relaying information from the Association of Fertilizer Producers that production is going down by 70% because of the uneconomic costs of gas inputs into their production. Across the board, wherever there is manufacturing, and there's not that much manufacturing in the UK, but still it is important for their agriculture to have fertilizer, wherever there is other economic activity, the gas, constricted gas supply, is going to have a dramatic effect both on jobs in manufacturing and on the cost of food products, which are dependent on fertilizers. So we have only looked at and spoken about so far one dimension of a general economic challenge that this leadership in Britain on the continent is incapable of dealing with. They are unprofessional. They have been big talkers, but they haven't gotten serious advice, or they haven't taken seriously the knowledge that is held by their own energy industry. Mr. Novikov, who for more than 10 years was the Russian Minister of Energy, said at the beginning of this latest crisis, just at the outset of the Russian military operation in Ukraine, that there would be enormous increase in the price of petrol, that there would be enormous price increases in electricity, and no one was particularly listening to him on the continent or in Britain, because they were big talkers who said they could solve the problem by networking, by going out, in the case of Mr. Scholz, all over the world, to Canada most recently, to secure energy to replace the Russians. That was all big talk, but it was ignoring the realities of the marketplace. These people are not supposed to be a capitalist society, but they have no respect for the intelligence and the expertise of their own industrialists.
Mr. Doctor, I'm going to stay with you for a second here. We can't look at Britain's economic situation now without mentioning Brexit and its disruptions in trade. Is the UK still feeling the ripple effects of leaving the Union, and is there still more to come from that divorce?
Well, there certainly is more to come if Truss becomes the next prime minister, because she said one of her first acts will be to rip up the agreements pertaining to Northern Ireland. With that, she will exacerbate enormously the trade conflicts that Britain has been experiencing over the last couple of years. And this will become a genuine trade war, which Britain can ill afford to engage in. So the British are shooting themselves in the foot by attractive campaign talk to get a very conservative lady, someone modeling herself on the Iron Lady of Thatcher, into the Prime Minister's office. And they're not considering the impact on their day-to-day living and on their expenses. Transportation is always a major factor in the cost of goods and in the cost of agricultural supplies.
Sure.
Coming in from abroad. They will be exacerbated by trade frictions and delays at the border that Britain will experience if Truss is elected and she follows through on her promises to disrupt the agreements over Northern Ireland.
Mr. Samueli, many blame the UK's economic troubles primarily on the situation in Ukraine, specifically the energy crisis and fuel poverty. How much of this is due to the consequences of the Ukraine war, and not just in the UK, but in all of Europe as well? Power prices continue to soar in several European countries, hitting new records, specifically in Germany and France.
Well, I think it's a very important aspect of it all. I mean, if you make a decision that you're not going to import oil from Russia by the end of the year, you ban coal imports, and then you close down Nord Stream 2 pipeline, then you really are, in a real pickle. And they really don't have any means of resolving this problem. So when Viktor Orban, the Hungarian prime minister, says, well, we're basically just not just shooting ourselves in the foot, we are essentially shooting ourselves in the heart and lungs. And then he went off, or rather he sent off his foreign minister to Moscow to sign an agreement for an additional, I think, 700 million cubic meters of natural gas. He was acting in the interests of Hungary, but the EU leadership was indignant and outraged by this because he wasn't showing solidarity. But why should Hungary or any other country show solidarity when Europe has undertaken a very foolish policy? I mean, they imagine that they would be able to bring the Russian economy to its knees and that they wouldn't suffer more than Russia. But as it turned out, they didn't bring the Russian economy to its knees. The ruble is doing extremely well, and they are suffering much more than the Russian economy is suffering, because it all goes to show, and they, who supposedly understand economics, the EU leaders, did not understand that the producer, a country like Russia that produces oil, coal, gas, grain, fertilizers, has all the power over the consumer. And they somehow thought, well, we're consumers, we're just going to boycott their goods, and they're going to crash to their knees, and we're going to do very nicely. Well, that's turned out to be nonsensically. And so, therefore, I think a number of countries, Hungary obviously is just basically wants very little to do with this regime, but Italy could be next. There could be a change in government in September, a new kind of right-wing populist government could take power, and they could well just simply say, you know, we've had it with these sanctions, we're not going to live in poverty, you know, this is Europe, you know, we're supposed to be the sort of the prosperous island in the world, and, you know, why should we do this for Ukraine?
Mr. Doctorow, focusing on Europe, the European Union has announced an energy crisis summit at the earliest possible date. Does Europe have the fortitude, in your opinion, to handle this crisis right now?
Well, it's too early to give a sound answer to that. The fortitude of these leaders will be tested by their own peoples. If there is nothing but such sullen resentment, if people sit in their kitchens and complain about the cost of living, then, of course, this group of pompous so-called leaders will prevail. If, however, in one or more countries, as is highly probable, there will be demonstrations, there will be riots, and it's entirely possible when we speak about the level of suffering that will follow from these price increases. If these disturbances occur, then we will be able to see a very different situation, and that will be a renunciation of these foolhardy policies that have been put in place by the European Commission and followed blindly by the 27 member states who believe wrongly that there is strength in unity. In this case, there is weakness in unity when unity is behind an unprofessional, ill-thought-through set of policies with respect to energy.
Mr. Samueli, London's tube and bus workers staged walkouts over pay and conditions. Teachers, lawyers, nurses, postal staff, as well as aviation workers have moved towards strike action as well. And similar strike actions were seen across other European countries. Help us better understand the impact that these major walkouts could have overall.
Well, the walkouts are understandable. Inflation in the UK is currently estimated as 10%. It's expected to rise to 13% by October and 18% by next January. So when you have inflation rate of 18%, while your pay raise, whatever pay raise you get, is 3 or 4%, that means you're taking essentially a 15% pay cut. Well, people don't take kindly to 15% pay cuts when, at the same time, food prices, energy costs, and everything is going up. There will indeed be strikes. I mean, that's what happens when people are suddenly taking a dramatic pay cut. And I think that's going to happen in Europe and in Germany also for the first time. Imagine, you know, this was a country that... you know, if you had 1% inflation, the Germans would get hysterical, you know, Hitler's coming. Now they're kind of living with 8% inflation. And now that the Germans are talking about rationing gas for industry, well, that means there are going to be layoffs, and that means pay cuts. In Germany, they do kind of partial layoffs. They don't fire people. They just, you know, give them fewer hours to work. But that means effectively it's pay cuts. Well, people don't take kindly to pay cuts even in Germany, you know, who are much more docile than the British. So I would imagine that the combination of inflation,
sure,
recession, and you know soaring electricity costs will, you know, contribute. This will be a bitter winter. This will be a real winter of discontent.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. All right. That's all the time we have for tonight's show. Gilbert Doctorow, independent international affairs analyst, joining us from Brussels, also Senior Research Fellow at Global Policy Institute, George Samueli, joining us from Budapest. Thank you for contributing to the program, and also special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, I'm Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll try to discuss the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم فألقى عصاه فإذا هي ثعبان مبين.
So Moses threw his staff, and suddenly it was a serpent manifest.
ونزع يده فإذا هي بيضاء للناظرين.
And he drew out his hand. Thereupon it was white for the observers.
As you were previously with us, dear listeners, we have reached the 33rd verse of this chapter. ونزع يده فَإِذَا هِيَ بَيْضَاءُ لِلنَّاظِرِينَ. He drew out his hand, and then behold, it was radiant white to the beholders. So, moving upon the discussion we earlier had, Moses and Pharaoh were in this session, they had a rather long discussion, parts of which have been reflected in the verses of this chapter, chapter Shu'ara. This conversation had its ups and downs, all the time Moses providing the right answer, and of course, more putting a question towards Pharaoh and his companions, and then Pharaoh escaping from answering that using the different methods he had. The last method that Pharaoh used after he got angry at the logic brought forth by Moses was that he resorted to the very same weapon that all irrational oppressors use. He said that I am able to condemn you to death or send you to my hellish prison. But Moses says, even if I have a proof, he says, أَوَلَوْ جِئْتُكَ بِشَيْءٍ مُّبِينٍ. Even in that case, would you send me to your prison? And then, in response to that, Pharaoh has no way but accepting it. فَأْتِ بِهِ إِن كُنْتَ مِنَ الصَّادِقِينَ. So, in the previous episode, we mentioned only one part of the miracle brought forth by Moses. فَأَلْقَى عَصَاهُ فَإِذَا هِيَ ثُعْبَانٌ مُّبِينٌ. He cast down his rod, and behold, it was a clear serpent. But this miracle did not end here. He had one other kind of miracle, about which there are lots of discussions in the commentary books that we will, God willing, mention.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وَتَأَلُّقَ تمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly, the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qum.
وَنَزَعَ يَدَهُ فَإِذَا هِيَ بَيْضَاءُ لِلنَّاظِرِينَ. After he cast down his rod and it was a clear serpent, he drew out his hand and behold, it was radiant white to the beholders. Since the point is that since Moses was making the true words effective, he wanted the people to believe in the power of the Lord. He used both hopeful and unhopeful or threatening methods at the same time. At one time, he cast down his rod against the ones who claimed to have the upper hand and power, and it was a clear serpent. And he also drew out his hand as radiant white to the beholders, just to show that we also bring forth mercy to you people. This is one possible explanation for bringing two different kinds of miracles in that session. So as we said, these two great miracles, I mean casting down the rod, becoming it a clear serpent, and then drawing out his hand as radiant white to the beholders, these two great miracles are the signs of hope and fear. The first one, which is making a clear, gigantic serpent, is a kind of warning. And the second one is for good tidings. One is stating the divine punishment, and the other is light and the sign of mercy, because miracle must be in harmony with Prophet's call. He is inviting people to monotheism, to the side of Allah, and Allah is nothing but Nur, Allahu Nuru Samawati wal Ard. The Arabic word Thu'ban that was used in the previous verse means a great serpent like a dragon. In the books of Mufradat, for example, Raghib says that this word is derived from another word that means the current of water, because the movement of this animal is like the streams that move in the shape of serpent form. It is called Thu'ban. Also, the Quranic word Mubin may refer to this fact that staff really changed into a great snake and serpent, and with no deceitful ways, it wasn't like what sorcerers did. It really happened. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us. There are some more points to be discussed regarding these two verses that we will, God willing, mention. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry, in your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of Truth. I do hope that these gatherings, these meetings or congregation for lamenting and reciting elegies in remembrance of the master of the oppressed, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, be arranged more often on a wider scale, from the grand orators and deliverers of sermons to the man who just stands by the pulpit and recites a few lines of elegy. All have a share in the success of these morning sessions. They all have a natural influence on proceedings, though some may not be aware of it. We have reached a station at which our nation exploded all at once instead of revolution. Such an explosion has been matchless.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. We seek refuge from Satan the accursed, and in the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, we start another episode of the program, The Spring of Truth. Welcome to this program, in which we try to reflect and contemplate and shed some light and paraphrase some of the sayings and valuable words of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, who is the founder of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Now, he says, that which places our planet on the verge of collapse is moral perversion. Moral perversion. Well, true. Islam offers a set of rules and laws to regulate people's lives and bring order to the lives of mankind. That which we call it the Sharia. But we shouldn't forget the fact that ethics and akhlaq play a key role in life. I I have actually fallen in love with this beautiful hadith of the Prophet where he says, "Inni bu'ithu li'utammima makarim al-akhlaq." This is so fabulous, so beautiful, which means I've been appointed as a prophet to perfect moral ethics. Moral ethics. That is why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala appointed Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam to come as our teacher, as our father, to help us perfect our moral ethics. If you empty your life of morality, you have taken away the spirit of life. You know, within the family, within our colleagues, our neighbors, friends, citizens of a society, what smooths the atmosphere and what builds a feeling of trust, love, and care is ethics. So let us all practice becoming better people ethically. And thank you very much for being with us and listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Last year, when U.S. military forces were withdrawing from Afghanistan, thousands of foreign and Afghan citizens were also trying to get out of the country. In those days, thousands of people gathered outside the airport in the hope that they can go inside and catch a flight out. But American and NATO forces failed to control the situation, and then came a disaster. This side of the canal is where U.S. soldiers were standing, using the barbed wire not to let people pass. And this canal is where people were trying to pass and get over the ridge. The explosion also killed plus 183 persons.
I saw people, including women and children, who were running. There were people carrying the wounded with wheelbarrow. Many of the dead and wounded people were thrown into the canal. Women were running and screaming, trying to get to the hospital. We were so close, so we went there and did what we could do to help them.
It was around 6 p.m. when a suicide bomber entered a crowd of disturbed people and detonated his vest just outside the international airport of Kabul on August 26th last year. At least 183 people were killed, including 170 Afghan civilians and 13 members of the United States Army. Some say all that blood is on the hands of the Americans.
In my opinion, Americans are solely responsible for that disaster. The chaos around the airport was deliberately created by the Americans as a cover to allow them to escape. On the other hand, they were aware that such incidents are probable. So why didn't they stop the evacuation process? Why didn't they disperse the people?
Also, some citizens blame gunfire by U.S. troops after the explosion for at least some of the deaths.
We can't confirm that. And,
the Pentagon in a conference acknowledged that possibly U.S. was responsible for some deaths, but later on they said that ball bearings in the explosive vest created holes in bodies resembling bullet holes. Although this explanation sounds so fishy, it is still not known if gunfire caused some deaths or not. Just hours before the attack, U.S. diplomats in Kabul warned citizens to stay away from the city's airport. They were aware of what was about to come, but were not willing to take any steps towards preventing it. Abdullah Amirzad of Kabul.
Thousands of people rallied in the Gaza Strip to celebrate the Islamic Jihad's victory against the Israeli regime and assert the unity among Palestinian resistance groups. Earlier this month, Israeli forces assassinated a top Islamic Jihad military commander in Gaza, prompting retaliatory attacks by Palestinian resistance movements. Israeli forces killed 49 Palestinians, including 17 children, during the 3 days of fighting. The Islamic Jihad maintains that it has achieved an honorable victory in the latest confrontation with the Israeli regime. Addressing the rally through satellite transmission, Islamic Jihad Secretary General Ziad al-Nakhala praised the unity among all Palestinian resistance groups during the three-day war.
The thousands of people attending this rally today are proof that all Palestinian resistance factions are united against the Israeli enemy. We assert today during this victory and unity rally that armed resistance is the only way to liberate Palestine and regain our rights.
The popularity of Islamic Jihad movement continues to gain momentum among Palestinians due to its refusal to recognize the Israeli regime and its adherence to armed resistance against the Israeli occupation. During the 3 days of intense fighting, the Islamic Jihad rockets shattered Israel's so-called invincibility myth.
Al-Quds Brigade is sending a very strong message today to the Israeli enemy regarding the growing might of the Palestinian resistance. The enemy thought that assassinating Al-Quds Brigade commanders will weaken the Islamic Jihad, but that did not happen. Al-Quds Brigade are stronger today than ever and will continue to fight for the sake of liberating Al-Quds.
During the 3 days of fighting, the Islamic Jihad military wing fired hundreds of rockets towards the Israeli-occupied territories. Observers say that the Islamic Jihad fought a fierce battle against the Israeli regime, forcing Tel Aviv to demand a ceasefire.
The strength of the Palestinian resistance has forced the Israeli enemy to ask for a truce. The Palestinian resistance is here to protect the Palestinian people and to liberate our land. The Al-Quds brigades have managed to fire hundreds of rockets at the enemy and forced it to evacuate their towns and run for cover.
Five wars have been unleashed between Israel and Palestinian resistance groups in Gaza since 2008.
Experts believe that in any future war, the Israeli regime will be dealt a heavy blow by Palestinian resistance groups in the Gaza Strip. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The outgoing British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has paid what could be his last visit to Ukraine as Premier. Meeting with President Volodymyr Zelensky in Ukraine's capital, Kiev, on Wednesday, Boris was hailed for his relentless support for Ukraine's war effort. He was even given a medal for his services. In the midst of ceremonies and handshakes, Johnson, however, reminded his fellow countrymen that there will be more economic hardships to come.
We also know that if we're paying in our energy bills for the evils of Vladimir Putin, the people of Ukraine are paying in their blood. And that's why we know we must stay the course.
Following the NATO-inspired conflict in Ukraine, Britain has pushed a hardline policy of arming the Ukrainians and sanctioning Russia. The result has been catastrophic on the British economy, further exacerbating a cost of living crisis and raising fuel prices to eye-watering levels.
Boris Johnson is completely out of touch with reality. This millionaire prime minister is telling the British people that they're going to have to continue to tighten the belts. He's presided over probably the worst cost of living crisis in living memory, which has been precipitated in large measure by Boris Johnson and his government support for a war in Ukraine, which could have quite easily been avoided. Energy bills have already doubled, or certainly gone up by well over 50%. We're being told by the energy regulator that the cap on energy bills is going to be increased still further. Already we have food banks in every town and city in this country because people can't afford to eat. Now we're going to, it looks like, have to set up in the voluntary sector kind of warm banks, I suppose, where people will be looking to go to community centres to keep warm. This is an absolute outrage.
Despite the hardships, Johnson's comments have made it perfectly clear that costs will continue to rise even after he leaves Downing Street. and British taxpayers are going to have to pay the price.
Boris may be enjoying the reputation he's built up for himself inside Ukraine, a country now left devastated by the war. However, his popularity at home may take another dive as the winter months rapidly approach and families will inevitably struggle to heat their homes and feed their loved ones this Christmas. Robert Carter, London.
Iran and Tanzania have vowed to draw a roadmap for developing bilateral relations in various dimensions. One of them is economy and trade. In this regard, Tanzania's business hub, Dar es Salaam, hosted a joint meeting of economic and trade activists from the two countries. Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, addressed the forum, saying the development of economic relations with African countries, especially Tanzania, is one of the foreign policy priorities of Iran.
The African continent is one of the major economic diplomacy priorities of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Along this line, Tanzania, as one of the most important countries in the continent, has always had this special status in the foreign policy of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
He also expressed that Iran is prepared to help Tanzania achieve its goals of development and industrialization. He added that both sides are determined to prioritize economic diplomacy. Over 20 Iranian public and private sector companies took part in the forum to show Tehran's serious will for business cooperation with Tanzania.
Africa is a very huge market, and many world powers come to Africa for discovering new opportunities. So I'm here with Iranian delegates to explore the east of Africa, especially Tanzania, to find out the opportunities, especially in telecommunication business, as our company involved in telecom sector.
Business cooperation between Iran and Tanzania is a bilateral opportunity for the two sides. In addition, Africa is a perfect market for Iranian goods like petrochemicals and the food industry products.
Tanzanian economic activists expressed their excitement about the expanding economic ties, saying they had been eagerly waiting for the joint business forum to kick off.
So there is a huge opportunity. Also, having this forum in Tanzania, we have been looking for it for several times. We have been asking for it because we know for all the challenges that we have been observing, this kind of forum can build up that bridge, can bridge up a gap of closing those challenges. So for us, it's a big marriage.
It is a fruitful opportunity for both countries, Iran and Tanzania, to do a cooperation in business, especially in trade, so as we can do exportation and importation of different commodities from two countries. And it is politically stable. We invite more Iranians and other investors to come invest in Tanzania. We have so much opportunity, so guys, you can maximize profit, but also make Iran better and Tanzania better.
Taking Africa's economic potential into account, the Islamic Republic opted to expand relations with African countries. Foreign Minister Amir Abdollahian's tour can be the launchpad for the Iranian government's long-term plans to expand trade with Africa.
Tehran has attached considerable significance to Africa as it looks to expand its ties with countries beyond West Asia. And Amir Abdollahian's African tour highlights the view that the world is not limited to the West. Mahdi Abbasian, Dar es Salaam.
Evidence continues to mount that France and the Eurozone are facing a long period of recession. French economic output just contracted for the first time in 18 months, with Germany's business activity plunging even deeper. The decline in output and demand has almost too many causes to list. At 6 months into the unrest in Ukraine, Europe's energy import costs have now quadrupled. The costly conflict shows no sign of easing as Brussels has abandoned diplomatic efforts with Moscow. The current drought across the continent appears to be the worst in the last 500 years, hurting crop yields, sparking wildfires, and increasing pessimism. That's helped push the euro to its lowest level in 20 years. The euro is now worth less than the United States dollar.
There are obviously many crises which are causing major problems for Europe, and many are linked to what's going on in Ukraine. However, we should not forget the supply chain problems which began with the coronavirus pandemic, nor the European sovereign debt crisis.
Despite the increase in gloom, last month the European Central Bank decided to raise interest rates for the first time in 11 years. That makes borrowing even more costly for businesses and individuals and could spark mass layoffs, bankruptcies, and home foreclosures. The U.S. has hiked interest rates faster than in Europe, while indicating that more rate increases will arrive soon. Since the Great Recession began, Western central banks have aligned their policies, though they do not move in an exact lockstep. The cost of living crisis is expected to significantly worsen this winter. However, many say a negative outlook for the world's most unstable macroeconomic bloc is more accurately described in years and not just seasons.
Inflation is something which could penalize the average person for 1, 2, or maybe even 3 years. So we are witnessing how the average French household is getting much, much poorer. Senior citizens are especially being hurt, and this will have major political consequences in France.
Analysts say a possible solution to Europe's energy crisis is to implement the JCPOA pact on Iran's nuclear energy program. However, both Washington and Tel Aviv continue to hinder Europe's ability to protect its own economic interests. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah has highlighted the stance of the resistance front in addition to the significant achievements accomplished in the past 40 years.
One of our duties in the future is to strengthen the strategies of deterrence to protect Lebanon's people, land, state, sovereignty and dignity, and natural resources and treasures.
The most pressing matter awaiting the resistance, he said, was the issue of maritime resources.
The main and current challenge that we're facing now and the few upcoming days is the issue of gas and petrol and the demarcation of the maritime borders. I will not say anything new. We have said everything that we should say. Now we're all waiting. The Israelis are talking and threatening, but we should wait and see.
The cause of Palestine was also a very significant endeavor, which Hezbollah sees as a duty of the past, present, and future.
In the last 40 years, we always believed in Palestine and the Palestinian resistance. We were dutifully supporting it, and we declared that openly and supported it in all forms, in the media and in politics. We have always declared that we stand by the side of the Palestinian people and the holy sites.
Celebrating 40 years since it was founded as a resistance movement, Hezbollah organized a mass rally where artists used hologram technology to commemorate the movement's martyred leaders. Those attending stressed that if it weren't for the resistance, they would not be here today.
The passion they had, the religious that it was in their heart, that made them believe that they can take care of us, of our lands, of our everything. Without them, we are nothing.
The celebration included real footage of past operations during the Israeli occupation of Lebanon, the liberation of most Lebanese land in May of 2000, as well as significant images from the 2006 summer confrontation of the Israeli assaults, and finally the fight against Takfiri terrorists in the eastern border mountains.
Hezbollah says it's celebrating more than a mere date on the calendar as its establishment day. 40 years ago today, the Israeli army, backed by multinational forces, occupied the capital.